Hi, I'm Dan Webster, film critic for Spokane Public Radio and blogger for Spokesman.com.
And I'm Mary Pat Truthart, part-time film critic, full-time childless cat lady.
And I'm Nathan Weinbender, also a film critic for Spokane Public Radio. I always hate following you.
Anyway, welcome to Movies 101, that show that loves, every once in a rare while, to shut off its collective brain and just revel in the sheer simplicity, sometimes stupidity, of a summer season packed with sheer cinematic sensation. Excuse the alliteration. That's one way of describing what the three of us will be discussing this week. Two of Hollywood's latest big-budget, big-screen offerings, Deadpool and Wolverine, and Twisters, both of which are either parts of specific franchises or merely continuations on a theme. Anyway, let's begin with a movie, the third featuring a fast-talking, irreverent-to-a-fault character played by Ryan Reynolds. That character is Wade Wilson slash Deadpool, a minor, somewhat sociopathic superhero, but two, someone with genuine feelings he buries under a litany of absurdly profane quips. His backstory is there to find by anyone with internet access, but the exposition, much of it delivered by Reynolds, who habitually breaks the fourth wall and addresses us, the audience, directly, lets you know what is going on, more or less, because there is a plot, one that involves Deadpool trying to save all existence, but mostly his own timeline, from various villains who want to control time itself or destroy it, choose your poison. To do so, he must regenerate the one X-Man, perhaps the X-Man, Wolverine, or Logan, if you prefer, played by an excellent Hugh Jackman. The plot, however, is merely secondary to the humor, the self-aware and self-referential meta-feel of the whole project, which aims both to make fun of what it's doing, poor Disney, and at the same time profit from its wink-wink attitude. You may be turned off by the R-rated language and graphic ultra-violence, but this is where all things involving movie theaters are headed. The smaller the audiences, the bigger and more provocative the movies strive to be. In any event, some of us in the Deadpool and Wolverine Dolby screenings laughed all the way to the end credits and beyond.
Well, I agree with the bigger part of your observation, but not with the provocative part, because I feel like mainstream movies are getting less provocative. They're getting safer and safer as they get more expensive. They're so concerned. I mean, they always have been, but even more so concerned with four quadrant marketing and intellectual property. And even this movie, Deadpool and Wolverine, only has the illusion of provocation because it does have lots of cursing and it has, you know, explosive gore. But those qualities are exactly what audiences are going to be expecting when they walk into this. So I don't think anyone is going to be scandalized by it because that's what they bought a ticket to see.
Anybody who knows Deadpool, the Deadpool
yeah,
franchise.
But it would be weird to walk into this one, Nicole. I mean, maybe some people will. But, you know, in that case, they'll be completely baffled by it because this is basically a two-hour fan service commercial. And I saw it on opening night with a big sold-out crowd, and they seem to really enjoy it, at least the most vocal people in the crowd enjoyed it, because this movie almost has like applause breaks like a sitcom would, because it'll stop so it can bring in a surprise cameo from a character or an actor that if you have been following anything with, you know, Marvel or Deadpool or 20th Century Fox or the Disney acquisition of 20th Century Fox, you'll get all of these in jokes. I imagine if you see this movie without a big crowd, it's just going to be like big gulfs of silence as the characters look at the camera and wait for the laugh. And I enjoyed Deadpool the first time around. I thought the first movie was a nice change of pace from the glut of superhero movies that we were
getting.
Particularly
the Marvel ones, yeah.
Yeah, and less so the second one, but I still enjoyed it. I liked his self-referential motor-mouthed routine. But by this third time, I found it mostly irritating. It just feels like more of the same. I'm glad that Hugh Jackman is there to kind of break up the Deadpool monotony because he's a very good actor. He's been good in just about everything, but I was kind of surprised by how much he's giving to this role that is, you know, this movie's a big joke, Deadpool and Wolverine, but he's taking his role seriously. I mean, as the straight man in the comic duo, that's his job. But I agree with you. I thought he was doing a really good job. Yeah, this for me, I know a lot of people are really loving it. It's made a boatload of money. It'll probably end up being the highest grossing movie of the year. But yeah, it just felt like more of the same to me. And it's trying for a lot of jokes. It's throwing so much stuff at the wall. Some of it made me laugh, but for the most part, it just felt like they were going back to the well and running these jokes into the ground And isn't that part of the joke, too? The self-referential stuff has kind of worn out its welcome for me. So that's me.
You know I'm not a huge fan of superhero movies. As a matter of fact, if you gave me a multiple choice quiz, I'm not sure I could situate.
A multiverse choice quiz?
Right.
Yeah.
Nathan, you're so bright. I don't know if I could situate different characters with Marvel versus DC Comics. You know, honestly, that's how little I care about it. Because it's one of those things I learn and then I immediately forget. So I probably benefited from they're providing some context or subtext to what was going on here. And I think that, you know, I'm not going to disagree with anything that you've said, Nathan, but I was entertained by this movie, mainly because I liked the sort of camaraderie between Jackman and Reynolds. And I think, you know, they've been doing a bunch of different interviews and so forth. And I think they seem to be genuinely friends in the outside world, outside the multiverse. And so I think that sort of comes through here. I also appreciate the snark and the sort of multi-leveled humor. I think that if you're going to look at to whom is this particular film directed, I think kids or younger people will get something out of it, but they're going to miss all the sort of nuanced humor, for better or for worse.
Well, they won't be able to buy a ticket for it without a parent or adult guardian.
Right.
There were kids at the screening.
I know, me too.
It is the first R-rated Marvel movie, and it's definitely R-rated.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but, you know, we used to take you on occasion, so
that's true.
You can never tell
that's
what's going to happen. But, yeah, there were
and
children
and we regret
ours.
That to the day to
right.
this day.
Yeah, look, we've created a monster. But, I mean, is there anything new here? Not really. Is it provocative? Maybe not. But I thought it was fun, honestly.
Oh, I think it's definitely provocative, although I agree with the point you were making, Nathan, about safer movies. Two things I wanted to point out is that we owe the audience, the Spokane Public Radio audience, we owe them the obligation to point out, one, this movie is very violent. Two, it's very profane. The F word is used throughout. So anybody who knows Deadpool knows that's going to come. But if you aren't familiar with Deadpool, if you're just looking at, wow, this movie's making a lot of money, I guess I better go. Just you need to be aware of that. And the second thing I wanted to talk about was Jackman. I mean, you said Jackman's been good in everything. I think he's been average in everything. For a guy who's so talented, who can dance, who can sing, who can act, I think his best movie was the 2017 James Mangold movie, Logan, in which that was the death of the character, which becomes a theme in this film itself. And he's just living up to the legacy of that character. I mean, it's going to be ironic that this guy with so much talent will be remembered for being Wolverine the
and
most of
all. There's jokes about that in the movie.
Absolutely.
Well, and I think he has a mixed response to that, because obviously if you want to showcase his talent, you're going to go see Greatest Showman. But I think that he has a mixed reaction to the fact that, you know, here he was doing some serious acting in Australia, and then all of a sudden when he comes to the U.S., oh, you can be a superhero. Good for you. So we've had a couple of conversations recently with people about violence in films, because some people we know refuse to go see any violent movies.
Which cuts out a lot of movies.
Right, and then we were like, what are you going to be left to see? And yes, there is a lot of graphic violence in this movie, but it's almost like the John Wick over-the-top kind of violence.
Yeah,
so I didn't think, you know, honestly, it's to be expected, I guess I would say.
Well, and, you know, it would be easy to say, you know, this is just a summertime entertainment. It's not trying to take itself too seriously. Like, why overthink it? But this is a massive film, and it's taking shots at the genre that it's in. It's taking shots at the franchise that Deadpool now belongs to.
Nobody's ever really dead.
And yet it's just kind of doing all the same things that those movies do. And yet it seems it's thinking, well, maybe, you know, we can absolve ourselves by looking into the camera and telling you we're aware of what we're doing. Mm-hmm. There's only so many times that joke works for me. And this, I said that it runs jokes into the ground. You know, all of the movies have had these really over the top violent action scenes, and they set them to incongruous upbeat pop songs. And, you know, it's funny the first time, I guess. This movie does it three separate times, and it's just overkill. But, I mean, I guess that's what the people want, because, you know, I'm sure it will make a lot of money.
We were
sure a lot of people will like it. But I just thought, come on, this is exactly what I expected from this, and I want a little bit more than that.
When we were sitting through the credits sequence, my brother-in-law turned to me and said, you know, that'd make a nice soundtrack. And he's right.
Well, yeah,
there
sure.
are some great songs.
Yeah,
on
sure.
There.
I mean, he dances and kills people to NSYNC. They beat each other up to a song from Grease. Madonna's Like a Prayer comes in. And
yeah.
it's like, yeah, those are all good songs. But is it funny? Like, is it supposed to be funny that they're just playing those songs? Like, that's an old joke.
Come laughed. On.
Okay. Well, hey, there's no accounting for humor or taste.
That's right.
And
see if I ever take you to a movie again,
well,
young
hey, look,
man.
Most people are going to be on your side, and I'll just be the grump in the corner.
Grumple Stiltskin.
Yeah,
that's
sure.
a line from the movie.
There you go.
And that was our discussion of Deadpool and Wolverine. This is Movies 101. It's time to take a short break. Before we go, remember that you can access podcast and Movies 101 by going online at SpokanePublicRadio.org. While there, check out the individual reviews that I write. Ignore Nathan's. Don't do it now, though, because we'll be right back to talk about Twisters. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio. And we're back. This is Movies 101, and I'm your host, Dan Webster. During the first half of the show, Mary Pat Truthart, Nathan Weinbinder, and I discussed the first of this summer's biggest blockbusters, Deadpool and Wolverine. Let's now continue that budget buster theme with a look at another exercise in entertaining cinema, Twisters. In 1996, the Dutch-born director Jan de Bont released a big little film titled Twister, starring Bill Paxton and Helen Hunt, and based on a screenplay written in part by the late Michael Crichton. The film was a box office hit, earning more than $241 million worldwide. Now we have something of a sequel, or maybe a reimagining, with Crichton again earning partial credit, though none of the characters, including those played by Daisy Edgar-Jones, Glenn Powell, and Anthony Ramos, carry over. Edgar Jones plays Kate, a woman with a science background who, still recovering from tornado-caused trauma, agrees to help her friend Javi, played by Ramos, who tells her he is developing a means to better understand tornadoes in the hopes of better predicting them. Powell is the maverick storm chaser Tyler, a self-described tornado wrangler whose catchphrase is, "If you feel it, chase it." Naturally, Kate hates Tyler at first sight, which sets in motion the film's rom-com subplot. There's also a corruption subtext involving unscrupulous profiteering. All that to the side, the main draw of Twisters is the CGI, or computer-generated imagery, which is impressive enough to make audiences feel as if they're right in the storms themselves. Too bad Twisters wasn't shot in 3D. In short, this is the perfect summer escape, even if it does exploit the threat that climate change is posing, especially for those living in what is often referred to as Tornado Alley.
Let's be clear that Twisters is not really a sequel to Twister, because the only commonality really is the weather phenomenon known as a tornado. And so I think that, you know, we can talk about what it means to be a sequel. So I appreciate movies such as this where they have real villains. And in this case, it's the tornado. You know, I don't like these fake characters that come from outer space and so forth, but this is real. And
Mary Pat chooses the conspiracy theories that she wants to embrace.
Right.
We all do that.
Oh, okay. So we're all inconsistent, yeah. Consistent in our inconsistencies.
Yes.
So is this a summer movie as Dan characterized it? Well, for some people, it would be damn scary because they have to experience these phenomena. You know, it would be like our in the Northwest watching a movie about fire that's continually encroaching on different areas and so forth. So let's talk just a little bit about the characterization or the characters in this film. So we have Kate, who, you know, was a storm chaser at an earlier point, but due to, as Dan pointed out, a traumatic event involving the loss of some of her colleagues, she's just strictly in it for the weather now. Anthony Ramos, who some of you may recognize, not only from West Side Story or In the Heights, but most notably from Hamilton, plays, you know, one of her grad school buddies who entices her to come back to Oklahoma, to her roots, and get involved in the tornado scene again. But let's face it, this movie really is focused on Glenn Powell.
Glenn
and
Powell.
His character either works or doesn't work. And interestingly, it's based on a real person who had a PhD in meteorology and you know, was sort of a cowboy, not really as extreme as Pal plays him. But, I mean, he's just a likable star. I mean, he is now a movie star. And I thought that this was an appropriate film. We also know that there's some tension among the different characters, but it doesn't necessarily play out in the predictable way that you might anticipate because they're professional colleagues and, you know, so forth. The most intriguing aspect of this film is the fact that it's directed by a director, Lee Isaac Chung, who previously directed Minari, which is this little film about an immigrant family living in Arkansas and creating a life for themselves. And so the fact that he's taking this on, I think, as his sophomore project was almost unbelievable because I can't make, although there's an ode to small-time America and rural life, these two movies could not be more different from one another. And I will say, Dan was disappointed that there was not a reprise of the Helen Hunt wet t-shirt scene, except there really was, because there's a Glenn Powell.
It's Powell this time.
Yes, yeah, exactly.
So I'm totally down with that, too.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, you know, with all the advancements that we've made in special effects, you know, in the last almost 30 years, it's somewhat comforting to know that Hollywood still can't resist a creaky old disaster movie plot. I mean, you said that elements of Twisters weren't predictable. Maybe. I thought this whole thing was extremely predictable. I mean, at the very beginning, there is a character that's introduced, and I said out loud to no one, I went by myself, I said, dead. And 3 minutes later,
well, of course, we knew
that
was going to happen.
It's that kind of movie. It's that kind of movie,
I was basically talking about the relationship between Kate and the storm chaser.
Tyler.
Yeah, Tyler. I was talking about that was maybe not predictable.
I see. Well, it's interesting to compare this to the original Twister, which I did go back and rewatch. And, I mean, it's kind of a fascinating study in how blockbuster movies have changed so much in the time since that was made. I mean, I really don't know if you can anchor a giant blockbuster with actors like Bill Paxton and Helen Hunt anymore. I think they would probably be relegated to the character actor roles.
Right.
Although you go back and look at that original cast, it is stacked with great character actors. You have Todd Field, Lois Smith, Alan Ruck, Jeremy Davies, Philip Seymour Hoffman, lots of, hey, it's that guy actors. And there are some of that going on in Twisters, these people that I assume we'll be seeing a lot more of in movies over the next decade. And we can look back and say, remember when they were in Twisters? And I mean, this is the kind of movie that rises and falls on its action scenes. And I think that's my biggest problem with Twisters is that I didn't really think the action scenes were all that great. I mean, they do rely on CGI, you're absolutely right, in a way that is not the case with the 1996 film. I mean, CGI, there are a couple really wonky CGI shots in that original one, but for the most part, it's kind of lots of composites and practical things. But I guess it's hard to make a Twister into a visually compelling action scene. I mean, Chung is an undeniably great director of actors. And I think the performances here are all mostly pretty good. I don't know if he has quite a handle on action yet. He's very fond of the tight medium shots, which I think robs these scenes of their big scope. And a lot of it is this kind of bleary gray CGI. I mean, that's probably what it actually looks like. But you go back and look at the way that Jan de Bont shot that original film, and it has scope and it has visual power and actual beauty to it, even though the plot is like the dumbest thing you've ever seen. There's a grandeur to it that I think is kind of missing from the action scenes in this one.
I think part of what the trap that we kind of fall into is that age old, who is the auteur here?
Yeah.
I mean, in a movie like this, I think Chung has a lot of effect. But overall, much of that stuff falls to the production team, and he's just sitting there going, yeah, I kind of like that.
He's sort of a for-hire. Yeah. I mean, and
Jan de Bont back in the days had much more
absolutely
control.
And he was apparently kind of a tyrant director, whereas this is a pretty standard thing that we see is a filmmaker has sort of an indie hit, an Oscar-winning indie hit, and then the next thing they do is like a Marvel movie or a Disney movie or a Twisters movie.
And sometimes they fail at it spectacularly, which this guy did not.
Yeah.
Spectacularly.
So, yeah.
So this movie has gotten some criticism because it doesn't talk about the larger issues of climate change. So Twisters, I guess, is supposed to let us know what's happening. And I did read an interview with Chung, who basically says, hey, you know, I did a deep dive into the effect of climate change on what's happening. And there's not, at this point, a true consensus. There's a consensus among scientists that climate change has affected the way these weather phenomena manifest themselves. But it's more focused on not the severity of them, but focused on the extent to which their sort of geographic parameters have shifted. So I think he maybe made a wise decision not to underscore that.
I also don't think that would have made the movie any more.
Yeah, I don't think. Yeah, I mean,
it's a disaster movie.
Right. So people are criticizing it because of that. I do want to shout out, I thought the sequence at the rodeo, there's a sequence that happens at a rodeo. I particularly liked that because you could feel, you know, there's this immense joy and then all of a sudden this looming, you know, event.
It also reminded me of Jordan Peele's Nope.
Yes, exactly.
I think that's more effective. Yeah. But
that scene also, if we're going to talk about predictability, you can look right away and go, these people are dead.
Oh, well, yeah, absolutely. But I mean, that's
also some people didn't make wise decisions.
It's kind of the morbid fun of a disaster movie, right? Like, it's just like a slasher movie way. I want to go back to the actors in Twisters. I mean, I think Daisy Edgar-Jones, I haven't really been bowled over by her in a movie yet, even though she's had some hits as an actor. Anthony Ramos is fine in this. His character is, I thought, one of the more predictable elements of the movie. Again, this is just another testament to the megawatt charisma of Glenn Powell.
Exactly.
And I almost, he's playing a nicer guy than you're anticipating. I kind of wish that there had been a little more cynicism
more
to his character. I think that might have given this a little more edge. But, you know, he's not going to play that kind of character at this point in his career.
Well, you
he's
have
on
to go
rise,
see Hitman.
You know? I already saw Hitman.
I know. Yeah, so yeah, I'm not talking about – I was talking about
I
you,
see, I
not
see.
You.
I see. The royal you or the royal we. Yeah. I mean, the camera loves this guy.
Yeah.
And you can look away from the Twister because you can't look away from him.
Right.
Like, he's just –
think back about Top Gun Maverick. I mean, Cruise and Miles Teller. And yet I remember Glenn Powell, one of the smaller roles in the film. At any rate, that finishes our discussion of Twisters. This is Movies 101. I'm Dan Webster, and earlier in the show, Nathan Weinbinder, Murray Pat Truthart, and I discussed another big budget offering, Deadpool and Wolverine. Let's take this moment to thank Cassia Fox for both producing and engineering the show. We thank you to our loyal listeners, and we invite you back next week, same time, same spot on the radio dial, when we'll again check out all the best that cinema has to offer wherever we can find it. Until then, consider these words from Wade Wilson, a.k.a. Deadpool himself, commenting on the Liam Neeson Taken franchise. They made three of those movies. At some point, you have to wonder if he's just a bad parent. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
The Movies 101 podcast is made possible by the members of Spokane Public Radio. Become a member at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Thanks for listening to Movies 101.